Recorded Books and RB Digital present Takes One to Know One by Susan Isaacs, narrated by Mia Barron. Chapter 1. Last night, I dreamt I went to Queens Boulevard again. With the stately steps of a bride, I crossed to my parents' apartment house in Forest Hills. Its 10 stories of once red brick had darkened from decades of traffic exhaust, but in the dream, it gleamed mahogany. A few doors down from the building, the awning on Perlmutter's comfort footwear, bent out of shape in some long-ago hurricane, still groaned. But in my REM sleep, the grinding metal sounded rich and Bach-like, a phrase from a cello suite. Not only that, the orthopedic shoes in Perlmutter's window looked so exquisite to me, I thought, or maybe said aloud, they deserve an exhibit at the Met. Right next door was Norman's coffee shop, where my mother warned me never to eat. But the aroma was irresistible, and as I stood on the median between east and westbound traffic, I unzipped my backpack and discovered a perfect grilled cheese sandwich. I dreamed I was living in Queens again, I told Josh the next morning. We were in the bathroom, at our separate sinks on opposite walls. The countertops were pink-veined marble, as was the floor. Not really garish. His late wife Dawn's style had been safely upscale suburban, which meant excess that never shouted, "Hey, look, great taste." It only whispered it. Poor Dawn. When she suddenly, shockingly died during a Pilates session from what turned out to be a theretofore undetected congenital coronary artery abnormality, everyone was stunned. Their friends told Josh and each other, she was the last person in the world you'd think would die young. Eliza was 5 years old then. Still, a couple of times when I was alone, sitting on the toilet in its own vestibule, I peered out into the huge, polished marble box and saw less a master bath than a family mausoleum. Dawn herself was in Mount Eden Cemetery in Westchester. She'd grown up in Scarsdale and had once joked she didn't want to be buried with Josh's Grampy Seymour at all and spend eternity on Long Island. As usual, Josh was far ahead of me, already showered, a towel wrapped around about half of why I'd married him. He was shaking aftershave, limey and rummy, into his palm. That sounds like something you'd say meh to at a Virgin Islands happy hour, but this came in a stout English bottle and smelled expensive, which it undoubtedly was. "What were you doing in Queens again?" he asked. "Was I there?" I squeezed a squiggle of Crest 3D white onto my brush, which I held aloft like Lady Liberty's torch. "No, just me. I was crossing the boulevard, and all of a sudden the world's best grilled cheese sandwich was in my hand." Tweet, tweet. Outside the arched window over the jacuzzi, there was a blue sky with cotton ball clouds. It was a prime May morning. A choir of local birds was serenading us from the branches of a sycamore and a cup-and-saucer magnolia. Or something like that. After 3 years of marriage and suburban life, I was still working on tree and flower names. "God," he said, "I don't think I've had a grilled cheese since I was up at Cambridge." That meant Harvard. Simply by his not saying the name, it boomed and echoed off the walls. Not that Josh was consciously boasting. 4 years in college there, plus 3 years in law school, had given his DNA a crimson tinge. Maybe that Cambridge moniker was an act of charity, to save others the humiliation that they'd gone to some lesser institution, like Stanford. I was always tempted to come back with, "When I was over in Flushing..." Josh was no snob. The other half of the reason I married him, once I got over the shock and flattery of his wanting to marry me, was his character. Decency. Like treating people up and down the social...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?